Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want to talk about a new movie?
Check.
Want to talk about an older movie similar or related to that new movie?
Check.
That's what you can expect from Quality Check Podcast.
It's a new podcast on the Studio DNA Network hosted by yours truly, Drew Douglas and
Daniel Posey. Every other Tuesday, we'll talk about a new movie and an old movie to see how the film's quality holds up.
Episode 109 of the What Else podcast. My guest is Mike McCloskey. Mike has been in and around contemporary Christian music, artist management, live tours, worldwide events for over 20 years. You're going to hear about making press packets at Rockettown Records. You'll hear about a decade plus with Six Step Records, working alongside Chris Tomlin, Crowder, Matt Redman, and Passion. You'll hear what it's like to manage and partner with some of today's biggest artists in CCM world. As we record this podcast, Mike is the general manager at First Company Management, working alongside Wes Campbell and Dave Wagner. First Company Management is the home of Newsboys, Ryan Stevenson, Rhett Walker, and more.
What Else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network.
I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a huge superhero fan. I love origin stories. I love departure stories. Where were you born? Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
From Louisville, Kentucky. So I say it the right way, Louisville. Louisville. My parents are from Pennsylvania. My dad went to grad school at University of Louisville, and that's where they stuck around. And so just 3 hours north of Nashville, just right there on the, they called it Kentuckiana, which I think you would appreciate being in Indiana, the area that I lived in, but spent the first 17 plus years of my life in Louisville before going down to Belmont for college.
What did mom and dad do?
My dad's a high school math teacher, like in the realm of like genius. The guy teaches AP Calc, BC Calc, ABBC, all the different letters of calc, derivative slopes. My mom stayed at home with us. My mom always thought she wanted to be a missionary, got married and realized that God had that plan for her life and stayed at home with us. And it was great.
Church kid, teenage years. What's the story there?
Yeah, I grew up in the church, went to a smaller church until probably about eighth grade. I still have my first Bible for where I signed in it that I invited Jesus into my life about 7 years old. But I still have that, introduced and loved Jesus from a very early age. My parents moved to a bigger church when I was in eighth grade because they just wanted me to be able to go, hey, we want you to be able to go to school with the same kid you're going to church with. We want some thread that weaves together through that. And youth group just changed my life. Like seventh, eighth grade, that introduced me to Christian music. Mike W. Smith was a huge part of my life. I played piano, took lessons for 10 years. That was kind of my thing. And so I would sit there and play Place in This World, and I would play Friends, and I would, you know, I would do that and sing. I was in high school, very much on the music track. I was an all-state tenor one before my voice changed, later than most other people's voices changed. Grew up in the church, led worship, played keyboards in the adult worship service in big church, and led some in the high school youth group as well. But that was a huge thread. Went to all, you know, camps, and my community was my church youth group.
You have a younger sibling named Rob. You guys close?
Very close. There were a lot of things in life that connected us. And I had a sister pass away when I was almost five, but my older sister. And so Rob was born right after she passed away. I let him tail with me wherever we went. So we had a different bond than I think a normal 5-year difference would give.
Do you remember your sister?
I do. I remember playing Barbies with her. I remember a lot. She was seven. Yeah, I did everything she did. It was that weird thing when you go from being a middle child, a second child, to being a firstborn. But yeah, I remember having a champion, a cheerleader, somebody that wanted me around her every minute.
Said you were singing, you were playing music. Did you get caught up in reading like the words on the cassette?
Absolutely. I remember a cousin in Pennsylvania gave me Michael W. Smith's Eye to Eye cassette.
The young men up on the hillside.
And I remember rifling through that, just starting to figure out what this business was. About my freshman year in high school, I realized I wanted to go to Belmont. I wanted to be in music to some degree. I didn't know. I would go to Walmart and I would buy every DC Talk album there was, every Audio Adrenaline CD there was. Wellspring Christian Bookstore in Louisville was a huge part of that. I'd go over there and I'd buy sheet music for all the songs I wanted. I'd buy Michael W. Smith's folios back when they still sold piano, vocal, guitar books. But you know, I was a teenager from Louisville. I had no connection to Nashville. I grew up on a one-income high school math teacher family, and the idea of going to a private school was not in the realm. So I didn't know how all that was going to pan out. I was just a huge fan of music. I remember listening to Elton John Rocket Man on my dad's record player with my headphones with the curly cord, listening to it pan from left to right. And that was an epiphany moment for me, for everything changed about music. I'm like, this is what I want to do. And I think it's gonna be a long, long time till touchdown brings me round again to find. I'm not the man they think I am at home. But I didn't know what that was, if that was going to be creating music. You know, I was writing songs and playing on the worship band and I was singing. But when you come from a mom and a dad where your dad is a mathematician, I realized pretty quickly that I was probably going to succeed more so in the business side, on the analytic side, than the performing side.
You graduate from Belmont. Did you have a better clue of what you wanted to do to get into the industry? Like, I want to go do this.
Yeah. When I was a freshman, all my friends were in the music business program and I jumped over to that right away. Really got a gauge of like, this is what I can do. How I was going to do it, I had no idea. My sophomore year, she's my wife now, my girlfriend's roommate was Darcy Chesbro Collins, and she was an intern at Rocketown Records. And so I'm 19 years old and she says, hey, she talked to Amanda, my wife, and she said, hey, I need help doing some press kits. This is back when they were folders and glossy 8x10s and scanning and collating and all that. And so she asked us to come down and help her do Watermark press kits, Nathan and Christy Knuckles, back in 1999. And I'm at a record label. I'm in an old house in Franklin, Tennessee. It's like the old Franklin Flower Shop that's no longer there. And I am, gosh, what is this? And so from that, I met a bunch of guys there at the label. One was a guy named Derek Jones, who's just a legend in my mind. It's been doing this. It was from the same hometown as Michael W. Smith. Michael owned Rocketown. And he just said, hey, can you come and work with us? And so from my sophomore year on, early on, I got my foot in the door at a record label. And it just all started to sink. So I was doing radio promo, press kits. A guy named Andy Peterson, who is just like the origin for me of just belief, like grabbed me and just said, hey, you're going to do retail marketing. I never left. I kind of cut my teeth from 19 on. I was working 25 hours a week at Rocketown as a paid intern. I was an RA. I was taking 19 hours of class load because I just wanted to get through college and I wanted to jump in full time.
My head would explode if I had a love for Michael W. Smith and then went to work for the label that he was a part of. Did you have to learn how to balance, there's the guy, or was there not that much interaction?
No, you're 19 years old. You're trying to play it cool. You know, I don't want Michael to know that for 10 years I've been singing his songs and playing at the piano awkwardly, that going to his live shows, his concerts really mobilized my heart. And it was God going, this is what I want you to do. But for me, I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what the music business was. My dad was going, how is this going to make money? Music business, you know, there's a lot of people that want to get in, and without, you know, I was looking at all my friends that have dads and connections and this and that, and I didn't have anything. So I just kind of went on faith and knew that God had called me to do that. But yeah, my head was exploding. He was my hero, still is in many, many ways. And to have that chance to not just see him as an artist, but to see him as a man, to see him around his kids and his wife and the grace and the interest that he gave a 19, 20-year-old kid at the time. Yeah, it blew me up, but it shaped me.
You put in a decade plus at what I would call a very successful label and ministry at Six Steps. What is it like? And I've been to a handful of those events, those passion events. What was it like behind the scenes of a passion event and watching that thing grow and steamroll every year, Mike?
It's really hard to articulate all that was involved. the amount of people that it took, what that was. You know, I went down to Atlanta and we left Nashville in 2005, and it didn't make a lot of sense. And people were asking me a lot of questions. Why are you doing this? But I just knew that on the other side of that door is what I was, where God was leading us. And we felt the Holy Spirit go, it's time to go to Atlanta. So got the chance to work with Shelley Giglio and Louis. And I mean, I can't understate the importance of Shelley's influence and love in my life and what that was. But, you know, jumped in, I was going down to work for a record label that was a joint venture with Capitol. And so, but we were also the management. So there's a whole lot of that. You think this massive operation when you have Chris Tomlin and David Crowder and Matt Redman and Charlie Hall and Passion, there were only three of us on the record label team in management. It was Shelley, me, and another person for a while. And then that grew, but on the Passion side, because we all wore multiple hats. So immediately I jumped in, they had this team lead network. And so they'd have all these volunteers that had been connected to Passion, whether through their college student or when they were in college. And I mean, the event was every January, and I'm not kidding. By February 1st, we were already meeting in person, starting to plan out the next Passion conference the following year. And we would do that with planning, with, we would all come together to Atlanta and we'd have brainstorm meetings and figure out what we wanted to do and how we were going to feed 11, 20, 30,000 people in their seat, how we were going to transport and get our artists where they need to go and our guests and our speakers. It was the most complicated, elaborate thing that I've ever been a part of, the moving pieces. I mean, we worked really, really hard. I can't even describe to tell you, it's like a 10,000 piece puzzle that you just dump out on your floor and start working on it. It was that complicated, but it was the privilege of my life.
That's the event side. And this was your first foray into management.
It was Charlie Hall.
Into marvelous light, I'm running. Out of darkness, out of shame. By the cross, you are the truth. You are the
Charlie was like the grandfather, he was the origin of Passion. He was the voice of Passion. And when I got to Atlanta, Tomlin was just starting to stir, getting a roll. Indescribable had been out as the radio single. Crowder Band was in Waco. And I'm a new manager. I'm cutting my teeth on that. And Shelley Giglio says, you know what? You and Charlie are going to, like, you guys are going to stand together and you guys are going to go at it. So she gave me Charlie to kind of be the day-to-day on immediately. Could not have been a better artist, but that was my thing. I remember planning his tours. It was me and Charlie going shoulder to shoulder trying to figure that out. I do remember one time, so I was getting to do this, and part of the management is, you know, you get offers to go play live shows and you got to look at the contract. You got to figure out, okay, it's worth this much money. And I remember third day offering to have Charlie come over and play to open for them in Birmingham. And I jumped on it and I was like, I get to do this and I get to say yes and figure that out. And Charlie was great with it. And I kind of didn't go through all the right protocols with Shelley and kind of like made it happen. And she's like, what? I think David Huffman at that time called her to confirm a couple of things. And I hadn't clued her in to that degree, but that was part of my learning process.
What's it like putting together a tour on the other side of the planet?
Well, you think that, you know, it's complicated enough in America. With Passion, I had the chance to do international tours. And my wife and I mean, we did events in Asia and in Europe and in South Africa, but my wife and I were the ones in charge of a Passion London tour stop back in 2008 and 2010. We did two dates there. And this was the beauty of the way that Passion did this was, we're not just going to go in and just kind of land on the ground in a venue and have this event. Like, we wanted it to carry the same DNA that the conferences in America had. And so I remember in a couple years, I had been to London 7 or 8 times. And in each of those trips, it was going into the local universities, the local college ministries, they call them unis in England, going in humbly and talking to the churches, talking to the student ministries about what we were doing, what our vision was for even being in London. And so we did this not just in London, we would do this in every stop that we went to really bring in, to submit and bring it, go to local pastors and college leaders and go, hey, this is why we're coming. Help us do this the right way. And we want to serve you because we're going to come in after the night of worship. We're going to leave, but you're going to be here with your students. Gosh, the humbling part of going 7 or 8 times to England and meeting maybe every significant college pastors in that country is humbling. And then going and booking a venue that is in pounds and how to deal with that, being an American company, an American entity, going, I'm coming over, just the wires and the complicated that, and then selling tickets. There's a reason why international tours are hard, especially when you decide that you're going to do them a little different way rather than just going and getting a promoter that's just going to sell, you know, book the venue that's, you know, on site and sell the tickets, which we've done both of that. But I love the heartbeat of going, we're going to go there and invest in these places where we're going rather than just going in and out.
You got to experience a lot of that ministry with your wife, Amanda.
I mean, I don't know how I could look back over the last 20 years, and Amanda's been part of every one of those stories, but it was the intentionality. It was Louie and Shelley Aguiglio, who husband and wife in Atlanta, doing ministry together. And they quickly, they knew that, okay, Mike, we can have you and we can do all this, but if you're not doing this together with Amanda, with your wife, they wanted us to do that together because they had done their ministry together and still do. For that, I mean, Amanda was able to travel. We went to London and Paris and Berlin and set up Passion tour stops. We went to the Grammys several times. And every time Shelley was like, you're bringing your wife, because what an experience to celebrate with our team and with our artists, their accomplishments. And for every one of those, it was very rare that we'd have a moment like an international tour stop or even America, Madison Square Garden with Tomlin. They're like, Amanda's coming. Amanda was got to sit side seat on a lot of really great things. And for our marriage and for me and for our kids, I don't think I'll ever know the opposite side of what would have been had we not experienced that together. But our faith together, it made the move to Atlanta. It made every decision we made. It just showed God's faithfulness even more that we saw all that together. We saw God come through.
What's it like to know that more than likely on any given Sunday, three or four of the songs that are being sung are by your artist roster? What was that like?
That was the heart of Six Steps. That's why we did what we did, to be able to take songs that our artists were writing and be able to serve the church. I remember being in Uganda, 35,000 people showing up for a Passion event in Kampala. We basically had to start playing music from the Jumbotron and the music to get people to start gathering in this university field. So I'm just walking around. I'm just completely floored. I've never been to Africa. And I'm standing there and I hear probably six or seven 9-year-old girls kind of holding hands in a circle, and they're singing 10,000 Reasons.
Bless the Lord, oh my soul. Oh my soul. Worship his holy name. Sing like never.
This is before the event started. That moment was etched in me forever, to go, God, how, you know, we make marketing plans, and I worked with publishing, and we did acoustic new song cafe videos, and we did all these things to try to resource the church and to get these things. But there's no way that those little girls in Africa and Uganda heard, like, that my plans, that our plans, our team's plans and initiatives got to them. And so that was the humbling part of going, Holy Spirit, you have gone in front of us. These songs are here. I don't know how they've gotten there. It's not from Spotify. It's not from anything I tangibly did, but the songs were there. And that just, I mean, that's a really humbling thing, but it sets you in the right space to know that we're part of the journey with God. We get to see what he's doing. Yeah, we can work really, really hard, but in the end, there's so much that we don't see that he's already done.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
4 years with the homies, now we graduates. 4 years, we ran this ish like a syndicate. We here to be the after party advocates, just making sure this post-grad life is more than adequate. We ain't gotta quit kicking it, you need a place to live. I'm looking for a place too, what a coincidence. Squad breaking up the rent so we can afford a crib. Make the move, grab a broom, biggest room, I'm calling dibs. We got janky second hand, don't need the dish. Thrifty coupon purchases, you get the gist. The house,
crazy. Rapper Peabod.
I looked for a manager for a really, really long time, like a year to a year and a half of searching and meeting with people and getting close, but something falling through. And then I found Mike, and I am so grateful for Mike McCloskey. You know, your manager is one of the most important relationships in your life. For me, it feels like this amazing jackpot getting to work with Mike, because not only am I getting this incredible business and industry knowledge that he has, but he also is like a spiritual advisor and is so emotionally intelligent. And I am grateful to get to work with someone who is also a friend and a mentor. And I can honestly say that not only is my career in a better spot since meeting Mike, but I personally am in a better spot because of Mike.
Oh, love him.
I remember the first time I heard his music, we were driving down to Florida on spring break, and somebody pointed me in his direction, and I was like, oh, I want to be in that guy's world. Such a joyful spirit.
That's exactly what
about
I felt. Being from the stories that I've been, like, we've been talking through, how in the world am I getting to work and serve a happy rapper from Seattle? I mean, that's God. That's crazy. But I love Isaac.
You were there for the Crowder band transitioning to Crowder as a solo artist. What was that like from your viewpoint? Because that was an amazing band. An amazing band.
That was an amazing band. Yeah, I jumped into Six Steps when A Collision was coming out like the next week. So I got to be part of several Crowder, David Crowder band with the asterisk records before he transitioned into Crowder. David is one of my favorite people on this planet. And it's everything that you know about him and see. He's that. But the band was winding down, and I think that through my experience, you realize when some seasons end. And I had that happen at Rocketown Records, and they're great seasons, but the Holy Spirit moves, and it's time. Like, you feel that wind blow. It's like Mary Poppins.
I'm Mary Poppins, y'all.
Like, you feel the wind blow to the east, and it's just like, okay. And for David, watching him carry that, steward that, walk through that. When seasons end, relationships change. That's always a challenge, because the band guys in Waco going to church and serving with each other and that shifting, you know, it's a really hard thing to walk through. But transitioning into Crowder and seeing him come to life on this new sound and this and who he was as a solo artist, I mean, those are some of my favorite days.
Let's talk about transitioning for a moment. I left a very successful mainstream radio career in 2002 to go work at our local big church here, and I inherited a 300 high school student ministry, 1,000 miles an hour for about 7 years. And then in 2007, it was time for me to leave. I'm not exaggerating when I say it took me a decade to be okay with leaving that church, because my identity got wrapped up in it, and I thought, what more is there after working at a church? What can I possibly do for the kingdom? When you left Passion to go to the next thing, what was that transition like for you?
You know, I can really relate to what you're saying. It was that. I mean, 12 years of our life was in Atlanta. It was a place that we never thought we would be. And then we fell in love with it and thought we'd never leave. Our kids were in the right schools. We were in the city down near Georgia Tech. And like, everything just made sense. And then that, I mean, I keep referencing it, but that wind of the Holy Spirit going, okay, I think that what I called you to do in Atlanta is the time is ending. You know, what we didn't also know is when we moved to Atlanta, there was no Passion City Church. Several years into our time there, we were able to plant a local church alongside this amazing team of people and Louie and Shelley, and my wife and I were leading the host team. And it was kind of like all hands on deck. So we're wearing walkie talkies and, you know, we're helping seat people So we were tied into this church. And, you know, I thought we'd be able to stick around Atlanta after that. I didn't know what that would look like. I just knew it was time for me to trust God. But it's like you said, I mean, it took several years to really unpack why it was time for me to leave and what was that the best? You know, is there being able to serve those songs and artists and passion and the friendships, the community, the neighbors, like, was that why, God, is it time to move on? And what is that to? And what are you doing in my life? What are you calling me to? Is it going to be, I sure hope it's as good, if not better, but those were some amazing days. And so it was just a lot of trust. And there was a lot of pain I had to walk through of leaving our community, our closest friends and family. And I think you can even hear it now. It took some time. It probably took 2 or 3 years to kind of unpack that and to see why God had us there. And I'm so grateful for it. But I see that those years marked what God had in store for me the next season.
Before we recorded this podcast, Mike shared with me a dark season with alcohol addiction and his road to sobriety and clarity. Mike allows me to ask some tough questions for the first time out loud.
Hey, we've got a problem here.
What did you do?
Nothing. I stirred the tanks.
Whoa.
Houston, we have a problem.
I think of addiction like Apollo 13. There's either a moment of you being Tom Hanks going, Houston, we have a problem, or Command Base is going, something's going on up there and we need to help them and we need to step out and say something. Are you Tom Hanks or are you ground control?
You know, you hear control, you hear Houston, and I think that as Tom Hanks, like, you just don't have a full gravity on it. Exactly that. There's no gravity. You don't have the perspective that the people looking at the instruments and all the data have in front of you. And so,
did you know there was something wrong?
Yeah, I think that I knew there was something wrong, but I wasn't going to mention it. I wasn't going to bring it up. That's the thing with addiction, is I felt I had complete control. If I didn't, I could get it, because I had always been able to figure out how to get through things and function. Of course, my wife, Amanda, who I've talked to, she knows, she knew, you know, there were definite things. And when I would be honest and vulnerable enough, people would go, yeah, there's a problem. But I hid that really, really well.
Where are you at today as we record this?
I am well in recovery and have been sober for 3 years now, which is exciting for me. And just so much, you know, I'm a dad. I have a 16-year-old, a 13-year-old, and a 9-year-old daughter. And to be able to realize that I was numbing and that I was escaping so much and the impact that was having on them, and to be able to, at still young ages in their life and at a place in my life, to be able to go, hey, I'm going to set this aside. I'm going to pursue you. I'm going to pursue health. I want to pursue clarity, because I have so much more I want to do. And I can't do that if I'm not having clarity in mind. You know, management is not something you can do in any kind of, you know, you need full clarity, especially artists and all the ways you need to serve and invest in them and encourage them and shape them and think and plan, you know, all the numbers and the tours involved. You can't do any of that when you're not thinking 100%. And most days I challenge myself to, you have to be on the top of your game if you want to serve well and have respect and do this well. And so me leaving alcohol, eliminating that from my life, changed everything.
3 years, Mike, I say to you out loud, congratulations.
Thanks, Corey.
What's a better movie about management? Jerry Maguire or That Thing You Do?
Jerry Maguire.
Arizona Cardinals, 4 years, $11.2 million. You're going to get to play in Arizona where it all started, finish up your career in Arizona. What do you think of that?
Woo! Woo! Jerry Maguire, my agent. You are my ambassador of Kwan, man.
That end scene where you see the relationship that Jerry has, I love that movie. It's in my top three. And maybe it's because of that, but that relationship he has when when they hug, when he's there for the moment that there's a comeback and there's this realization, and they, and the other agent sees the difference that Jerry has with his athlete. That is what I want. I want to do things in a way that are different, very personal, and I want it to matter. I want to be in the mix in the people's lives I'm around. I want to invest. I want them to be better husbands and better people. And I think that's why Jerry Maguire, and that scene resonates with me forever, because that's what I want to be.
Mike McCloskey is a great manager for me and a good friend, because I tend to get overly excited and anxious about things. And Mike always has a really level head. He's able to sort of bring me back down to earth whenever I start to spiral. He is a source of encouragement to me, for sure. He's always sort of peppering our conversations, whether they're on text or on the phone, with encouragement, spiritual encouragement and prayer. And that's just another way he grounds me. So, you know, on a music and business level, he is a good match for me, but also as a friend. I just really appreciate his encouragement and kindness and consideration. He is, 10 out of 10 on many levels.
What a beautiful language.
The process that Josh took to get there and the amount of time it took him to learn that, I mean, it was weeks and weeks, but that was his heart. He's like, it's such a message for the world. And the time, it was his idea, and the time that he spent to get that translation right and to put that together, that's who Josh is.
What kind of boundaries do you have in place with artists? Is it a call anytime, or is it a 9-to-5?
Management isn't 9-to-5, but that doesn't mean it's an unhealthy not 9-to-5. You know, the artists I work with have families, they have things going on, but there's going to be things that hit you at any time of the day. There's going to be doubts that you have. There's going to be times where you need a sounding board. And that's where the line shifts between manager and friend and encourager. And if my phone rings during my daughter's soccer game, I'm not going to pick it up at that point in time, but there's this trust that they know that when they need me, that I'm there. And if they need me to be out on the road with them, I'm going to be there. But it's not to the point where I have to be there to make them know that I care about them. It's not that if I miss a phone call, they're going to go, oh gosh, we need to rethink management because my manager didn't pick up the phone and prioritize me every second. There's just trust in all that. And I think when I launched out on my own and started my own management company and moved back to Nashville and was figuring out what I wanted to be as a manager on my own and not serving with another company, it was that kind of thing. Like I didn't want to go and sit down and go, okay, here's the boundaries, here's the rules, this is when you can reach me, this is when you can't, and if this doesn't work, then I'm gonna, my sobriety is gonna be in question, or my family's gonna be in question. It was none of that. There's just a trust in I can tell them, hey, I can't talk right now, or I'm gonna talk, and they don't take that as Mike doesn't care about me, and go into their place where, you know, it's not hard for an artist to go into a place of insecurity, just like you and I.
Talk about saying goodbye when it's time to say goodbye to an artist.
That is the hardest thing. You know, I've talked about Crowder and Tomlin and Redman, and I've been able to serve and work with a lot of amazing artists. So when I talk with some new artists, I'll say, hey, inevitably this is going to end. God has connected us in this season, and we're going to work really, really hard. But 10 years from now, there's a chance that our relationship in a professional role will change. And I just want to make sure that everything that I do and everything, the way that I serve you and manage you, that in 10 years, you and I can still sit down at this same restaurant table and care about each other and know that we gave everything. And I think that's where it is with the artists that I've had to say goodbye to for, you know, more than a decade of working. And that's the beauty of it all, is that Tomlin lives, you know, just down the street, and I was at his and Chris and Lauren's wedding, and they are the dearest people. They care. Like, when it all came down and I was no longer in a professional role with them, and this is for Matt Redman, and this is for the Knuckles and all that, when it came down to it, those friendships and what we had and what we did and what we saw God do together, they mattered way past the transactions. And those people are like, the friendships are still there. And that's just an amazing thing to know that we were in trenches together that nobody will ever know. Nobody will ever know what we set out to do in the faith and the complications and the challenges that we had, but we know. Chris and I know that. That's a special bond that will never go away. So I love that through change of seasons that doesn't mean fracture of friendship and what we did, what we saw together.
You've seen record sales segue to digital sales. You've seen digital sales segue into the streaming world. What's next?
Digital is the space, and really more than talking about what the next format is, we're trying to fully harness what the current format is. I don't think in our marketplace that we've fully harnessed that. I can say confidently we haven't. There are so many different realms of reach that our artists, that my artists, that I get to the privilege of working with, can better themselves on the digital platforms, whether that be through YouTube and our Spotify relationships and Apple relationships and Pandora. And yeah, it's not really looking towards what's next. Is how do we really come around and fully, before we look at what's next, we haven't maximized what is. So let's maximize what is. There's more consumption and more people are consuming music and listening to our music and my artist songs more than ever before. Well, that looks differently than them going to a Christian bookstore or Walmart and buying a Christian CD. It does, but they are listening to music. So that's the big question, is how do we deliver music in today's consumption era where it's people want singles, and how do we continue to tell full stories? See, I'm still an album guy. I'm still a place where what an artist, they come in, they don't just say, hey, here's what I want to say through one song. I love when they go, here's what I want to say through this collection of songs, because songs come in collections like way more than they come in. You just get, hey, I just wrote this one song. Let's go and talk about this for the year. Here's what God has done. Here's what I've experienced. Here's 10 songs. So how do I go and, you know, playlisting on Spotify, you only get one shot at that. When the record comes out, you get to choose one song to playlist. Beyond that, you have to turn in a different song, a different version of that song, a new master to get it playlisted. So if a record comes out in 10 songs, you got one chance to get one of those songs in the playlist. So that to me means, well, we can't release 10 songs all at one time because we won't have the chance to put it in front of as many people as possible. And this is why you see songs come out one, then you have another song come out, and then it builds to complete, you know, the collection of songs. It's how do we, with the end in mind, here's what we want. We want an album. It's like building a skyscraper. At the end of the day, we want to build a skyscraper, but there's so much in digging the foundation and what the concrete is and how to get to that point that matter to build that structure. And the same thing with an album. At the end of the day, we want an album. How do we release that music into a way where the most people can connect to it? And then it sits in its final form for those to find it forever.
This is Ryan Stevenson giving a quick shout out to my man, Mike McCloskey. Mike is one of my besties, my manager, sidekick, all of the great things. Mike is such a wonderful human being, more than just his business expertise and his management expertise and all the ways that he is an expert in the music industry. He is a friend, he is a father, he's a husband, and he's got wisdom beyond his years. I'm so thankful to be able to walk down this journey with him and to do life with him and his family, and just having a partner, having a mentor, having a friend by my side, navigating this crazy life in this crazy music industry is so amazing. I love him. He's the best. Honored to be in ministry with him.
You kind of hit me going and getting Peabod and Josh and Ryan and just hearing those words. That's not a normal thing for a guy that sits in my seat to hear, you know. But you know, all those guys I've connected with since I moved back to Nashville and launched out on my own since my encounter with brokenness and addiction. And it's just God's faithfulness to hear those guys say those things that, you know, they didn't know me in Atlanta to that degree in that role.
What's next for you, Mike McCloskey?
Continuing to just follow God's lead. I mean, I've told people this and I'll tell you this, like I'm having as much fun 20 plus years into this that I've ever had in my life. I love serving those guys and a few other artists I get to work with. And I just want to keep being faithful. I want to keep serving these guys and girls really well. It's a weird thing when you mix friendship and business. I don't know any other way to do it. And that could be, that's been hard, but that's going to always be part of it. And I jumped in and helping out with the Newsboys management and working with Michael Tate has been something else. And every step I take, God has something on the other side of it. I'm grateful for health. I'm grateful for the artists I get to work with. I wouldn't change anything.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network? Leave some feedback, write a review, hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.